from Sydney. Welcome to our first episode of Proof of Concept, the tech show where we will explore real live use cases from the field and discuss some of the hot questions in the field of data science and AI. I'm your host, Grant Case, and along with me here is Alex Hubert from Singapore with me. How are you doing, Alex?
Hi, guys. Very nice to meet you. I'm very well, Grant, and nice speaking to you today.
Fantastic. So today, here on Proof of Concept, we're going to dive into a piece of technology you may have been hearing about, but maybe you don't know anything really it is, and it's Kubernetes. So K8's known a lot of times. So the first question we always ask here on Proof of Concept is, you know, what's the cool stuff you can do with this technology? So Alex, what is the cool stuff we can do with K8's?
It's not obvious straight from the beginning, right? Because K8's Kubernetes just run in the background. So a lot of end users wouldn't realize that, for instance, the application that they're using is orchestrated by Kubernetes. And in a couple of minutes, I guess we're going to explain in what it means. But ultimately, if we take a very concrete example, it's like your application right now, whether you're thinking about your banking application, your IoT devices, it connect to the internet, you talk through it through the internet, and it's always up and running because basically you have a mechanism called Kubernetes that manages it into the background, whatever the load that you're going to receive on that specific service. And we can expand on that idea. So a lot of stuff right now are using Kubernetes in the background, websites, application for smartphones. And that's definitely has an impact on everyone's day-to-day, but we just don't realize it because all we see is a nice front end and a nice application, really.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the benefit and the beauty of Kubernetes, right? We don't know it's there, but it does us great, cool stuff. So it helps us scale out technologies and scale out websites, it scales out AI and data processing, which is, I think, what interests me the most about Kubernetes. It's the ability to scale out that compute at any point in time. A very interesting article I was reading on AWS's blog about an organization that is retraining neural network models, and they use Kubernetes to do that. And they're going out and they're getting something like 22,000 cores of GPUs in order to go to do that sort of processing. And that's just not something, you know, even 5 years ago, hell, probably 3 years ago, we couldn't have done.
That's clearly wasn't possible. Kubernetes was open source by Google a couple of years back now. And it's exactly what you said. It's basically a container orchestration platform that helps to manage a lot of microservices, as we like to call them right now in the industry. So every little microservices is going to be managed by potentially a Docker container. In the Kubernetes jargon, that's going to be pods. You can have a lot and a lot and a lot of those pods, either processing data, retraining machine learning models, processing data, as we said, at scale, or just simply running some application. And that allows you to do that at scale. Everything is highly available. It means that if one of those pods, one of those services at some point comes down, well, from an end user perspective, you don't really see it. The training of your machine learning model isn't really going to be affected because a lot of other pods are processing those data at the same time. And because we're talking about scale, once again, you are going to save a lot of time and you can repeat those experiments simply because you can do that over and over and over and over again.
Okay. So, Alex, you just threw a whole lot of technical jargon at us. And I'm sure some of the folks absolutely understood that, but there's some folks that may not. So let's go to one of our corners here of Proof of Concept. And that's Eli Five, my CEO. For those who don't know, explain like I'm five. Explain it like I'm five to my CEO. What is Kubernetes?
Yeah, that's a very good point. So essentially, if you have to make it super simple, you have to look at Kubernetes as a distributed framework that lets you do things at scale. And when I say thing, let's insist on the compute at scale, whether we are talking about data processing or making sure that your website is going to stay live on a lot of different services. Once again, behind the word services, you're going to have computers. It's literally what Kubernetes does. If we remove all the technical jargon, it's a nice distributed framework that allows a lot of different computers, not exactly computers, but let's put it this way, to work together to accomplish a big task, super expensive, once again, from a computational perspective, and make it much faster, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look at it this way. When it comes to Kubernetes, if I can do processing on one computer or one virtual machine fast, what if I had 10? What if I had 100?
Exactly.
What if I had 1,000, but I only needed it for an hour, and then let's at the end of it, I don't need it. It's that infinite ability to scale up and down. I put a big in the NBA finals coming up right now, or the NRL finals a few months ago. If I've got a big ad campaign I'm about to do, I don't need all of those resources forever. I just need it for a really short time for that commercial. That's the best thing that Kubernetes does, allow us to take care of that spike in attention and interest and compute needs right then and there, and then give it away at the end.
And that's a very good point that you're bringing right now, that the concept of up and down, because Kubernetes and the concept of compute at scale in itself, it's not something new. It's something that we've tried to do in a numerous occasion, and the technology it compares the most to is probably Hadoop, but it was much harder to implement that concept of up and down with something like Hadoop.
That's a good point, Alex. And you're still in my thunder, man. You're still in my thunder. Let's get into it. So one of the things we always talk about with technology always changes, right? We were all using it, you know, when we were all growing up, it was floppy disk, or maybe it was CDs for someone. Now, you know, maybe a jump drive earlier, now it's just in your iPod, or or now it's just in the cloud. So let's compare and contrast this technology, Kubernetes. You mentioned one of those technologies, Hadoop. I thought Hadoop was still a thing, right? So what happened? You know, why is this different?
Hadoop is still a thing. Like, I mean, it's an interesting question, and maybe at some point we're gonna have to address this one. It's a big debate whether or not Hadoop is dead. And the reason why is because Kubernetes proved the concept of elastic computing in the cloud to be extremely effective for a lot of organizations. And why is it extremely effective? It's simply because all of a sudden, I don't have to manage that huge park of servers myself. I can simply, as you said, turn it up or turn it down for the compute that I want to use right now at that precise moment, for my services that is online, for the processing of my data, for all the machine learning and deep learning models that my data scientists and my ML engineers have to train. But if they are training those models right now and not during the night, I don't want to have to pay for that compute in the night.
What? You don't want to pay for a bunch of servers overnight?
Why would you? Like, you know, it's if you can avoid, and that's the beauty that AWS, Azure, and Google is really bringing to the world. You only pay for what you consume, really. And for a lot of IT organizations, all of a sudden, you don't have to manage that huge park of machine by yourself. You don't have to go into your own data center, changing this specific computer as a resource, technically speaking. And that's a lot of cost saving. So Hadoop, in that instance, is at least seriously challenged by Kubernetes. It's still around. We still see it a lot in the different organizations that we go through. But the big trend, let's not fool ourselves. It's to go into the cloud right now.
Yeah. And if I think about compare and contrast, while Kubernetes by no means is the easiest technology to deal with, it's easier to deal with than Hadoop at this point in time. And I look at it, this is just the natural evolution of everything that we've done in, you know, computer science and microprocessors. This is just the next evolution, right? Yeah. Bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger machines, more and more cores, more and more processors, more memory. How can we bring it to bear? Kubernetes just gives us that next little bit. So it's not to say that this is the zenith of where we'll be. You know, who knows, in 2 or 3 years, I hear a lot about other technologies like Dask or Ray. But ultimately, right now, if I need to do my biggest jobs, if I need to work on, if I need to build a neural network model, or I need to train a bunch of machine learning models to predict if my customer is going to churn, I'm probably going to look at Kubernetes to do it.
Yeah, and that's and if we stick to the idea that you brought a little bit earlier on, try to compare technology. Like, what's your view on Spark, for instance, because Spark was really the engine that built Hadoop for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. So now you have Kubernetes, you also have Hadoop, you have Spark. What do we do with all that?
That's a great question. And I think about it this way. What was Spark trying to deal with? Spark, I've got a problem that's larger than the amount of memory and the number of cores I can deal with in one machine. And that's ultimately that distributed framework of what Spark gave us is how it dealt with it. You know, I could distribute it across 10 machines or 100 machines, or in the case of some of the customers I deal with, 600 machines in their Hadoop system itself. And that's because you could tackle those sorts of problems. The problem we've had at this point in time is elasticity is catching up, right? Yeah. So we see technologies like Snowflake coming in and the ability to stand up and scale down warehouses much faster. We have the capability to use something like Synapse and go out and do pulls, other technologies, etc. So we're not necessarily as constrained anymore by the single instance. The single instance is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So, for example, if we look at, you know, just training machine learning models, MLlib, when it was released, got a lot of, and MLlib is, in effect, the machine learning framework underneath Spark. I don't know too many people that actually use it today because it's got a lot of bugs, and it, you know, Python Scikit has won. If I can train something on 96 cores of an M5 metal on AWS, why would I use that Spark framework to deal with it? And if there's no feature engineering jobs or data engineering jobs I can't do in a Snowflake or a Synapse, what value does Spark bring to me? So in the end, I think it's a good technology, and you know, Kubernetes and Spark seem to work well together, but are they long for this world?
We'll see. And once again, it's a very good point. What you're basically saying is, depending on your specific use case, Kubernetes doesn't have to be the go to everything, right? A lot of stuff can be done in database. Actually, this is something that people tend to forget, especially with the hype around Python. We're trying to do everything with Python. That's great, but as much as possible, sometimes you can just leverage a very powerful database or database.
SQL framework has been around for 50 years. Exactly. The stuff I learned 20 years ago is still relevant.
You have some distributed framework as well on SQL. Snowflake definitely being one of them. So Kubernetes is definitely a very good and strong technology. We're very happy with it. We see a lot of customers that take a lot of value out of it, but it shouldn't be necessarily the the de facto approach when we talk about big data processing. It's not because you can put Spark on top of Kubernetes that it's definitely remove a lot of pain compared to Hadoop, that you should just be thinking Kubernetes, Kubernetes, and Kubernetes again.
So you brought up a really, really good point there. And it's time for, and by the way, if you'd like to tag along, comment along in the stream itself, we'd love to get your questions and answer those. So Alex, the CEO, your manager, how do you make money, you save money, or you bring customer service into the picture? What does Kubernetes do for us?
Yeah, because ultimately that's how we like to position things, right? From a technology vendor and technology advisor, you should obviously choose technology from use case to use case, right? But also keeping in mind what's going to be the actual value driver around that technology. Can I make money out of Kubernetes? Can I save money? One of the easy answers that I think we have touched so far is that, yeah, it can help you to save a significant amount of money. And we see that from organization completely removing from, moving from their, you know, like data centers they have to manage themselves. IT is basically a cost center. Now they start to move into the cloud. They only pay for the compute that they need. They don't also have to pay for all the administration of all those massive clusters, massive machines. It's a lot of cost reduction, really. The immediate impact on your P&L is definitely cost reduction. But if we go back to the first example that we gave, especially the one in the Super Bowl, it's not only cost reduction. It works in the background to help you generate money as well if you implement it very well, because yeah, we go back to your Super Bowl example, huge spike of load on your website because of that amazing advertisement that you did. Well, if you cannot translate all that spike into actual dollar monetary value, then all the effort was done for nothing. And guess what's going to handle all that load in the background? Well, probably something called Kubernetes.
Yeah. So, and I think that's kind of the interesting thing about this to me. When it comes to Kubernetes, yes, there is a cost reduction. You know, we all know the dirty little secret is if you run a bunch of stuff on AWS spot instances, guess what? I can do, you know, I don't use, hey, it's, you know, 80 to 90% less. No, you pay 5 to 10 times more if you want to make sure you have that on-demand pricing, right? So that's easy in terms of the layup for me is the cost reduction potential of Kubernetes of that scaling. But to more point, how can we serve more customers more quickly? How can we put more models out there? How can we scale that modeling and that training to meet that demand of a marketing, of a sales? Doing a forecast across multiple different with multiple different scenarios. That's the power of Kubernetes. That ability to scale out immediately to me is the cornerstone of what it can do.
So
we're here at the last segment of the proof of concept, and that's predictions. I always enjoy predictions because, you know, every prediction's right or your money's back here when it comes to predictions here at Proof of Concept. So let's look in the crystal ball. So what do you think about Kubernetes and just in general? Alex, are we going to be talking about this in 2 or 3 years?
Two and 3 years, definitely. Like the amount of organization that are transitioning from the cloud. Like we had a conversation with the team again this morning with someone that tells us, hey, I have invested into that huge Hadoop cluster. I'm not saying that I'm going to completely decommission it because I have some data here that cannot go into the cloud, but I also have a lot of data that I can now put into the cloud that I can process in the cloud. And I also want to be closer to the end application. So just having everything in the cloud makes more sense. And once again, Kubernetes for data processing, Kubernetes for machine learning model training, Kubernetes for servicing application in front of your application. 2-3 years, that's definitely still going to be there. The real question is what's going to happen on the long term. Like 10 years ago, I remember, like when I started at the Teleco 6 years ago, sorry, it was all about Hadoop. You would go into those massive Cloudera events. Everybody was saying that Hadoop was there to stay. You never know. Kubernetes itself is coming from the open source world. I think it's a fantastic piece of technology. I personally think that it solves a lot of the issue that we've been trying to solve for many years and decades, and at a fraction of the cost. So it should be there to stay. But what if tomorrow AWS just released a Kubernetes 2.0 that is even better than Kubernetes?
Yes.
And not obviously called Kubernetes, but called something.
No, that never happens in technology. Never, never.
Exactly. So then the real question is, yeah, like in 10 years, is this still going to be around? That I don't know.
Yeah. I look at it this way. I think Kubernetes is a wonderful technology. If you talk to most organizations, it's the complexity of rolling out that technology that is one of its limiting factors. But I think that's also in the way it's introduced into the organization. It's typically been an IT-driven tool. So how do we take multiple applications and kind of put it in? I don't think of it that way. I think of it as an engine. I think of it as Dataiku as a vendor being able to start up a Kubernetes cluster and effectively scale out with the underlying infrastructure of an AWS, a GCP, a Snowflake, a Azure. We don't have to think about that anymore. If we're the ones managing it and the IT organization isn't it, guess what? I don't need to think about it. So, and that becoming that kind of underlying engine, I think ultimately is probably, what it ends up becoming. It's not a general purpose tool. It basically becomes kind of the common component that's used amongst all of the applications to effectively grow. If just to give you one example of where Kubernetes is found, Snowflake, everything they do is just, it's S3 buckets, it's blob storage and Kubernetes. So everything that we're doing, we talk about, the greatness that is a lot of these SQL engines and being able to do that. It's just Kubernetes under the hood, man. It's just rebadged. So, Alex, I want to thank you for joining me today. And really, I want to thank everybody. Please stay tuned for upcoming up and subscribe to Dataiku LinkedIn and our YouTube channel. So stay tuned for additional episodes. Thanks, Alex, from Singapore.